Chase and Big Joe, 1025, 1063, The Game. I see the music hasn't changed. And I love that.
Well, you're
it's
back.
It's a great song.
They're in concert tonight in Franklin at First Bank Amphitheater.
Are they really?
You're back today, so it's kind of easy back in step by step. And you love Donnie Wahlberg. So it all works out perfectly.
I didn't know they were here tonight.
Two nights. They played last night and tonight. But here's the deal. I'm not sitting in 1,000-degree heat to see them. I love them. They were great when they were 2 years ago. Paula Abdul and Jazzy Jeff are with them.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's pretty cool. Now we talk some football with our man John McClain, who is on the line with us from Houston. HoustonTexans.com is where you can find his work. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, guy. I'm a big Donnie Wahlberg fan, but not because of music, because of Blue Bloods, which has been on for 14 years, and CBS is dumping it, even though it's one of the highest rated shows because it just got too expensive. And it's amazing, after watching him all those years as an actor, as a cop, a hard-boiled New York detective, seeing him out there on the dance floor, rekindling those moves from 30 years ago.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy. It's been on 14 years. A fantastic show. So we're basically, it's here, John, as training camps will start to open over the next week. You got, you know, some that are going to be reporting with rookies and all of that. Titans are going to be next week. What's kind of the pulse there in Houston right now with anticipation going into year two of this new era with C.J. Stroud at quarterback?
Jackson Stark training camp tomorrow. The Bears and the Texans are the only ones that have everybody in because they play the Hall of Fame game. Some teams have rookies in. But the team itself, you know, they act like, as they should, last year didn't happen. We're starting from scratch. You know, nobody cares what we did last year outside the organization. But the fact is, people are fired up. You can't go anywhere where they're not fired up. And even though people here are fired up, they understand how tough the division is. They know the Texans went from last to first last season, playing a last-place schedule. Now they're playing a first-place schedule that is just brutal. I've never seen a tougher one in Houston, and especially an array of great quarterbacks. So people understand that. Nationally, I see people talking about them being, you know, Super Bowl contenders. I don't see it. You know, they'd love to be a Super Bowl contender because every team would love to be a Super Bowl contender. And every coach of a last-place team, like Brian Callahan, they're using the Texans as an example of what can happen. You can go from worst to first if you do what you're supposed to do and you stay relatively healthy and you have to get a good performance from your quarterback. And I think, you know, Will's situation there, a lot of people are talking about Anthony Richardson, and they should. But the quarterback situation under Brian Callahan is, to me, one of the most interesting in the league because the AFC South has a chance to have really good quarterbacks from top to bottom and all young. You know, Trevor Lawrence is the old man of the group. And so I'm really fired up about watching these quarterbacks develop and seeing what they've done around him. And Stroud, boy, it's tough because of the expectations people are putting on him. And he'll, when he talks to us tomorrow, he will temper everything because that's just the way he is. But they made a lot of changes here, brought in 14 defensive free agents, signed or drafted 5 defensive players, re-signed 5 of their defensive players. So that's 24 because they know on that side of the ball they're going to get bombarded by quarterbacks like Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Dak Prescott, Tua Tagovailoa, Caleb Williams. I think they're going to see Caleb Williams. Maybe J.J. McCarthy. It's early in the year, though. Could be Sam Darnold and later Drake May. I'm eager to see those guys as well. Plus, all the AFC South teams. I think a lot of people around the league don't realize how competitive the division was last year. You know, one game separated the top 3 teams, and it could be like that again. I think the Titans will be improved. Maybe they'll go from worst to first. If not, I know they'll be better. Probably injuries will tell the tale about who finishes where. But boy, it's a great time. This is my 48th training camp, and every year I tell people, I'm like, I used to be in school the first day of school, because you always want to go see who's in your class and who your teacher is. And there's an excitement as you go to school, and that's the way I am right now.
John, we're talking a lot of SEC media days up in Dallas and your state of Texas right now. I know the NFL does have their owner meetings and all that go on. Would it ever work where they did a media day in the NFL, one certain location, you're bringing two players, offense, defense, to one place, and that, you know, if you wanted to talk to the Seattle guys, you could, and, you know, maybe because you can't during the year. Would that work, or is that just a bunch of nonsense?
No, that wouldn't work in the NFL. Players are off. You know, you'd have to pay them. That'd be a violation of salary cap. The league meetings, which are in a resort every year, not stuck in a pit like Dallas, they stay at fancy resorts. And, by the way, I thought it was hilarious. Nick Saban not losing his credential, forgetting his credential, but shooting down all the talk about Texas will run the SEC. And I'm like, yeah, you just wait. Why are the SEC media days in Dallas?
Right.
The Longhorns wanted them there. And I saw a thing last night, and I don't know if it's true, that Elon Musk might be providing the Longhorns with some NIL money like Phil Knight does at Oregon. And the Longhorns already have more money than God. You know, how many teams, when players, recruits get off the bus, walk a gauntlet of Lamborghinis like they did? And so you just remember, Nebraska left the Big 12 because they didn't want to be run by the Longhorns. A&M left because they didn't like the Longhorn network and thought it would be an unfair recruiting advantage. Plus, they wanted to get out from under their shadow, which is one reason A&M did not want Texas in the SEC. And it'll be a slow process. But Texas is the 800-pound gorilla that sits where it wants. It has nothing to do with the performance on the field. It has to do with money, political influence in Washington. And so you guys just remember where you heard that first.
I absolutely will. You mentioned this is your 48th training camp coming up. Are you kind of surprised now there are no more holdouts? And with that being said, what's the most contentious holdout you ever covered covering the Oilers/Titans?
Well, used to, when the collective bargaining agreement was different, the Oilers would have players hold out till the trading deadline in October, and they would get signed or they'd be traded because they wouldn't pay the guys what they wanted. Alonzo Highsmith, the fullback, third overall pick in 87, he was who now is an executive with the Patriots. Alonzo held out, and they went right up to the trade deadline. And his agent, the late Robert Fraley, who died on the plane crash with golfer Payne Stewart, they came in for one last talk before they got it done. They drafted Jim Everett, quarterback, in 86, even though they had Warren Moon. And it turned out to be a stroke of genius. Everybody thought, well, they must be unhappy with Warren Moon. No, they couldn't get the trade offers they wanted before the draft, even though they had two or three teams interested. So they went ahead and drafted him. They went up to the trade deadline. He and his agent, Marvin, I forgot Marvin's last name, most famous agent out there.
Demoff.
They came in here, went to Bud's office. We staked it out for almost 24 hours before they came, and he'd been traded to the Rams in a deal that brought them, I think, eight players eventually. Wow. And helped them go to the playoffs 7 years in a row. And I've seen some really, really ugly ones. And one offensive tackle, Harvey Salem, who was the first pick in the second round in 1983. Bruce Matthews was the first pick. He didn't like the money, so he told the general manager, who was very vindictive, Lad Herzig, would you please trade me to the West Coast, where he was from? And so I was doing stories with Harvey blasting the general manager, Lad Herzig. Now, they were really good stories, and I probably should have told him, you're going to get screwed for doing this, but I was more interested in the stories. So at the trading deadline, he called Harvey Salem into his office, said, well, Harvey, I've granted your wish. You've been traded. And he goes, oh, where? Raiders, Rams, Chargers, Seahawks, No, the Lions. He goes, Detroit? Why would you trade Detroit? And he said, almost every day you've been bleeping me in the Chronicle. And so I'm bleeping you. Now get the hell out of my office.
Yes.
And he went to Detroit.
That's a fantastic story, John. Do we still have John?
I'm here.
Oh, there he is. Okay. We'll have more with John McClain coming up next as we preview training camps around the league. It's the Chase and Big Joe Show, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Welcome back to that same old place that you laughed about.
Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Here on this Wednesday, continuing our conversation with John McClain. So, John, you mentioned you're going into your 48th training camp, and you know you've told stories about players and interactions with them. You know, with X or Twitter now, you know, it gives them an opportunity to express themselves. And I found some comments a few days ago from Jeffrey Simmons a little interesting. And I guess it was after the Titans had signed Jamal Adams, and you know, people giving their opinion on that and facts on him that, you know, he's missed the majority, you know, a lot of games with injury and all of that. Jeffrey Simmons tweets, I just be seeing a lot of tweets and hit that bookmark. How do some of you guys cover us, the Titans, but hate us so much? He goes on to say, I mean, they're at every game, home and away, all in the locker room, smiling, trying to make friends with the guys, but then they get on here and hit a 360. What are kind of your thoughts on that? I think facts were given. Jamal Adams has missed a lot of games. That's a concern. But Jeffrey Simmons takes it in a completely different direction.
Well, he was a disappointment. Seattle, they gave up two number one picks for him.
Yeah.
And he's got enormous talent. He needs to stay healthy. And if he stays healthy, he can be a really good player. You know, I think for them signing him, it was worth it. You know, you're not paying him anything now except for money that you gave him up front. So a lot of players need to have their own ways to be motivated. Jeffrey Simmons has been treated like royalty by the media there. I guess he forgot that. I've never seen anything negative about him anywhere, really, since he came to the NFL and they took such a big chance on him, and he's rewarded the faith that the organization has in him. But you know what? If Adam, you know, nobody's ever going to go up if Adams gets hurt again, say, see. You know, you have to present the facts, and those are the facts. And if that helps him get motivated, and tell you what, they got a chance to have maybe the best defensive tackle tandem in the NFL. And but players do that. I don't pay any attention. I never look at one of the things I've done. I've been on Twitter for I can't remember how long. I think I got like 153,000. Followers, and I never look at anything anybody has tweeted at me. And the reason is, the first day I got on it, this young guy was working with me, showed me how to get on it, and then he's looking and he's scrolling, he's going, oh, I said, what? He said, well, some of the comments, people, I said, what? He said, well, never mind. I said, no, what? What are they saying? And he goes, you really want to know? I said, yeah, well, how about this one? You're old, bald, fat, lazy, and you're a liar, and you need to retire. And I said, tweet him back and say, I said, I'm not a liar. And so from that point on, I never have looked at anything. And but that's the way people communicate a lot today. I used to have players get mad at me all the time, especially Oilers, when it was so much more fun to cover a team where you could go in the locker room before practice, after practice, hang out, talk to the players about their families, their schools, where they played. And if they didn't want to talk to you, then they wouldn't talk to you. But you got to know them really well. And I know a lot of those guys I covered really well now. And it was a lot of fun. But, boy, the papers were big back then. Newspapers are not what they used to be. Teams have their own website. Titans do a great job on their website. I don't know anybody that does a better job than Jim Wyatt. And so that they have different ways to get their news out than they used to, either because I'm older or I don't know. I haven't had a player say anything about me. A few times they got mad at something I tweeted, And that's the only way I know, but they never said anything to me.
Yeah, I just feel like there are times, and look, Jeffrey Simmons is a great player. Do I feel like he has another level to him? Absolutely. And the Titans need to hope that they see that this year. That's my opinion on him. But I feel like sometimes players nowadays, and Twitter has been a big part of this, they don't have as, or at least it doesn't appear as they have as thick a skin as they used to. And then the other part of that is you were talking about, you know, asking guys about their families. That's how you are able to get a lot of information. You kind of get to know them on a personal level. You're not being their friend necessarily, but you're having friendly conversation. And I feel like sometimes people don't understand that that's a part of it.
Well, it's changed so much because you're limited in the time that you can be in a locker room, 45 minutes, and players are not in there the whole time. And usually if I've talked to Andre Johnson more in the first year after he retired than the 13 years I did when I covered him, because if I went up to him to try to talk to him, a crowd ran over there immediately. DeAndre Hopkins, to me, is one of the most interesting people I've ever met. And by the way, people should check out the book his mom has done, because her story is one of the most incredible I've ever seen, and his too. But, you know, you want to have a conversation, and they come in, and you maybe if you're standing at their locker, you might get like one sentence in before people come running over to do interviews. So it's not, and I don't spend as much time going around talking to them as I used to, because the locker room has so many people in there. I don't want to take up somebody's time that's trying to do an interview and get in the way just trying to get to know somebody.
John, I'd laugh because, you know, obviously Jeffrey Simmons did not do well in geometry, because 360 means a full turnaround. I was hoping he meant a 180 on that. John, what's the maddest a player or coach has ever been at you, probably for something you've written?
Oh, gosh. Earl Campbell, one time, I did something that I regretted immediately, and he didn't talk to me for 30 years. Now he does. And you never.
Whoa. What was it? Do you remember?
Embarrass a player in front of people. And I had written a lead that Earl had fumbled on. The Oilers won and the Chargers won, and they lost. And that was my lead. And he came in, and then I was in there before practice, sitting on a bench in front of a wide receiver's locker, reading the Houston Post, my competition. And Earl came in and was, so I remember he said, "I want to thank you for that thing you put in the paper today." And I didn't respond. And he walked by me, go to his locker, and he said it again. And so I did what I regretted. I said, "You mean that degree from the University of Texas in speech communications helped you to read, not just look at pictures?" And boy, the players, they go, "Ooh, ah," and all that. And I regretted it immediately. And the next time we spoke, I think that was his next to last year here, but I would see him off and on. But the last we started speaking again around Bum Phillips's funeral. And then now I'm around Earl quite a bit for charitable functions here. But I learned right there, never, ever embarrass a player. You know, you pull them off to the side, you let them yell at you. I don't see that anymore. I used to see players really going off on media people in the locker room because they either something they heard on a talk show, but mainly things that they read.
Oh, yeah. It's funny, you know, John, one of my all-time favorite players in football was Jim Crash Jensen of the Dolphins. I you know, he didn't make the highlight reel every time, but he played for 10 years in the league, and he just loved him, and he had a great, great story. I know I don't mean to put you on the spot. What's the best sport story you think of a guy who made the team that has stuck with you, you know, all these years later? Somebody that had no chance, maybe undrafted free agent. I know you've talked a lot about Blaine Bishop and his journey making the league. Is there somebody that stands out to you that you just really loved covering and was just a great guy in the locker room and was nice to you?
I saw him the other day. He's an investor here. Doug Dawson, who played at the University of Texas, was second-round pick of the Cardinals in 83. And Doug blew out both of his Achilles twice. And he was from here, so he lived there. And I would see him at different events around town. Then he decided to make a comeback with the Oilers. And I'm walking off the field near the end of training camp when they're starting to make cuts, and I called him the longest of the long shots, and he walks up to me and says, let me tell you something. I'm Doug Dawson, and I'm going to make this team, and blah, 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 blah. And I said, well, I hope you do. And he said, no, I'm not going to be a long shot. And so Doug made the team, and he's one of the funniest people I've ever known. He used to like to say he was a guard, and he played between Munchak. He played with it was Munchak and Matthews and Doug Dawson. And Doug will still say today, he'll say, you know, me and Mike Munchak and Bruce Matthews combined for 27 Pro Bowls. Well, he had none. And Doug had a huge gut. And when they were on the sideline and close to fans, like in Oakland, Munchak and Matthews said that the fans would yell so many funny things, ripping Doug because of his gut, they couldn't help but laugh. And if one of them turned to those fans and acknowledged that they could hear it, and one time Munchak did that, and, of course, the fans let Doug hear it even more.
I love it.
And so he was a guy. And the story on Blaine Bishop, I was playing golf with some coaches before the last roster cut, and Blaine was an eighth-round pick because last year they had eight rounds of the draft, and I had written a story for the next day talking about on the bubble, long shots, not going to make it, secure. And I mentioned to the coaches afterward, I put that Blaine wasn't going to make it. And the DB coach, Tom Bettis, said, whoa, what'd you say? I said, well, I have in the Chronicle my story tomorrow at Blaine Bishop. Eighth-round pick's not going to make it. He goes, oh, you better change that story. He said, not only is that kid going to make it, he could end up starting. And I said, you're kidding me. He said, no. So back then, you could go back because there was no internet and have plenty of time to change the story. So I rewrote it, and I confidently said, not only is this rookie from Ball State going to make the team, he's got a chance to start. And I looked really smart.
That's fantastic. Oh, that's awesome. John, we are looking forward to these conversations as we finally get into training camp and then the season. It is almost here. Enjoy training camp opening tomorrow for the Texans, and we'll talk next week.
I will, guys. Thank you very much as always, and good luck to the Titans starting camp next week.
Absolutely. He is John McClain. HoustonTexans.com is where you can find his work. And again, he is a part of the Chase and Big Joe show every Wednesday at 9:30, and we look forward to those conversations with him. Coming up next, we'll give some thoughts on it. We're still a week away for Titans training camp, but I heard Joe and Kuharsky talking about a couple of things that I have missed while I was on vacation. I want to give some thoughts on. We'll do that coming up next in hour number two, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.